I asked young voters across the country what words come to mind when you think of the Republican Party, and it was things like closed-minded, racist, intolerant, old-fashioned, stuck in the 1950s.
Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie with Reason TV, and today we're talking with Kristen Soltis Anderson. She's the author of the new book, The Selfie Vote, Where Millennials Are Leading America and How Republicans Can Keep Up. Kristen, thanks for talking
to us. Thank you for having me.
All right, talk about what are the main insights that we should know about millennials? You know, where are they socially, economically, politically?
So the world is changing very quickly, and our politics have really failed to keep up. It's kind of hard to make a generalization about such a large group of people, but in general, the trends we're seeing are trends away from living in rural areas towards more densely populated areas.
But they are much more ethnically and racially diverse.
Much more ethnically and racially diverse. And their political impact is only just beginning to be felt. So the baby boomers right now, the proportion of them that vote is pretty high. But frankly, they're going to be fewer and fewer of them as we move along. The millennials haven't even begun to fully exercise their political weight because some of them aren't even old enough to vote yet.
What ethnic groups are making up the millennials, and then how do ethnic groups change? Because, you know, it's different to be Italian American in 1900 versus 2000.
Exactly. So one, we're seeing a huge expansion of the Hispanic population. And what a lot of folks don't realize is this is not as a result of immigration. It's folks that are born here.
Right.
Nowadays, in a state like New Mexico, I mean, most children who are born are Hispanic. And so the trend lines demographically are very clear. If you took a look at the exit polls in the 2012 election, Mitt Romney actually won young white voters by 7 points. But this is such a diverse generation that he winds up losing the youth vote overall by 23 points because he did so badly with non-white young voters. So I mean, the diversity of this generation, it's something like less than 60% are white, and that number's only growing as the younger millennials come of age.
If, you know, we say the greatest generation and the ones before the boomers came out into post-war America, they were looking at a huge booming economy. What are the millennials faced with?
Millennials are facing a really tough economy, and they're facing a difficulty getting jobs in the fields that they want. They're facing trouble getting jobs that offer some kind of career path or growth. They're also struggling to be able to save up enough to make some of the big purchases that previous generation viewed as signs of adulthood.
So that's what, like cars,
things like
and
buying
houses.
Exactly. Right. You know, home ownership is kind of at its lowest since the government really began collecting data on this in, I think, the early 80s for the younger generation. It's not that they don't want to buy homes. I mean, on a variety of fronts, this is kind of a commitment phobic generation, and buying a home is a pretty big commitment. But, you know, as they were coming of age, their parents' homes were being foreclosed on. They could see the foreclosure signs around the block. They saw their parents' 401ks evaporate. So things like investing in the stock market, putting your money into a house, they don't think that those things that we might have previously thought of as safe financial decisions, they are not viewed as safe. They want to save money in a mattress. They're very small C conservative.
And are they more entrepreneurial than previous generations? You hear that a lot, and every hipster is selling their mustache wax or something.
So in spirit, yes. In practice, not as much, in part because of that sort of small C fiscal conservatism and risk aversion. They want to be able to do this. They want to be able to start businesses. They want to be their own boss. They don't want to be told what to do and go into some big corporate structure. But the idea of starting your own business is also pretty risky, and you need to have some money saved up. And if you're paying off student loans, sometimes that can be too risky a proposition.
Do millennials tend to see work as expressive of their values and identity in a way that is distinct from previous generations?
Very much so. I think a phrase I've heard is the mission-driven. I mean, that where you work is kind of an expression of who you are, not just something that you do to work to get a paycheck to pay the bills so that you can be who you are off hours. And that kind of blurring of lines between work and life is a big thing. I think it has to do, one, with you can't get away from work when you leave work. You've got your phone with you all the time. But they also want to do something in their job that they feel is meaningful. They don't just want to push papers all day. They want to feel like they're making the world a better place.
Yeah.
I think the opportunity there for folks who are free market leaning is I think there's a huge opportunity to talk about how the market can solve problems and the stuff you do for your work can solve big problems in society rather than a government program.
How do you reach millennials? Because they're also, I mean, they look different. They have, you know, different values. They have different net worth. You know, what are their media habits, or, you know, where do they get their messages? Where do they get their news? Where do they have their conversations?
So I think a lot of politicians think they can just get on Facebook and Twitter and they've checked the box. Well, actually, Facebook is now more of an older person's game. It's got more parents than non-parents. Twitter is more an activist space rather than a youth space. It's a lot of visual storytelling apps, and a lot of mobile video is where young folks are at these days. Snapchat, Instagram, that's where I think politicians, I'm hopeful that they will begin trying to use this to reach people and use it effectively. Rand Paul was one of the first to sign up for Snapchat. But also, you can't just use these tools, you know, sitting there in your suit and tie in your congressional office, like, I'm going to Snapchat. You have to actually do it to tell an interesting story.
Do you have an example of that where a politician has used new media or social media to tell a good story in a different way?
So there aren't a ton of good examples. I think one of the ones that I go back to a lot is in the 2012 campaign, the contrast between how Barack Obama and Mitt Romney used something like Facebook. So for Mitt Romney's Facebook page, it was a lot of click here to donate. Here's information about our latest rally. Here's the latest news article about this outrageous thing that Obama has done. The Obama Facebook page, on the other hand, was a mix of that and pictures of him with the dog, pictures of, you know, him and his wife, telling that personal story. When you go on Facebook, it's a mix of news links and personal pictures.
And then you mentioned in the book that Romney, oddly after the election, now his Facebook feed, and he's also on Medium, he's kind of telling personal stories about himself.
Right, and I think that suddenly gives him this credibility where people who previously thought of him as this evil supervillain now can see, hey, actually, he's not such a bad guy.
You were saying you can't just put on a suit and then, like, do an ad that you would have done for, you know, the ABC News or, like, Meet the Press and just broadcast it on Snapchat. You really have to be kind of entreating people and having more of a dialogue and a conversation. Things have been leveled. The mighty are not as mighty, and the weak are not as weak.
Exactly. That there's this sense that our politicians live in a bubble. That they live lives totally separate from ours, and they just live in this alternate reality, and they don't get what people like me are going through. And to the extent that that's in many ways very true, the social media platforms can allow them very briefly to kind of drop that veil and show, hey, actually, you know, just like you, I have tastes in pop culture and I am a normal human being. I am not just a caricature. Yeah. I think that's a real opportunity.
Yeah, there's a string of ask me anythings on Reddit that are hilarious when celebrities or politicians go on, and then the questions immediately get nasty, and it's a kind of test to see if they can roll with that or if they just kind of
climb and up. I think the ability to laugh at yourself is a big part of thriving in online communication too. I mean, I mentioned in the book President Obama going on Between Two Ferns, being able to laugh at himself a little bit about the disastrous rollout of the Affordable Care Act exchanges. Just yesterday, I think there was a video of Lindsey Graham sort of making fun of himself about how Donald Trump gave out his cell phone number. Like, very quickly turned around a funny video online. You know, the ability to kind of laugh at yourself, I think, is a big part of
and,
succeeding
in
communicating online.
And, that is fascinating generationally, because you can see a lot of conservatives in particular really huff and puff about how could Obama talk to, what's her name, Flozell?
The cereal bathtub.
as well as Between Two Ferns, to be singing Al Green songs or even Amazing Grace. And in a lot of ways that, you know, goes into another section about the book, is that are Republicans so out of it that they seem to be doing everything possible to alienate themselves from anybody under 50, pretty much.
It's definitely been a challenging number of years. I did focus groups in 2013 that I talk about a lot in the book, where I asked young voters across the country, what words come to mind when you think of the Republican Party? And it was things like closed-minded, racist, intolerant, old-fashioned, stuck in the 1950s. And Republicans, I don't know, have done enough recently to try to combat that image. I mean, every so often you'll have one or two who try to do things well, but the overall image still needs a lot of work.
Yeah, and I mean, in one of your chapters, you talk about, you know, showing up and reaching out. And really, I mean, Rand Paul stands out as somebody who's doing that. He's actually mixing it up with younger voters. He's also calling for more kind of inclusion of minorities. Is anybody else doing that? And even his efforts are kind of half-assed, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times when Republicans try to figure out how am I going to reach young voters, well-intentioned but misguided efforts are focused on pretending to be cool, which always comes across as phony and is not the way
to
go.
And this is like wearing mom jeans as opposed to doing criminal justice reform.
So, but if you take a look at somebody like a Ron Paul, I mean, he won the Republican primaries among young voters in certain key early states. And he's not the hippest, coolest guy on the debate stage by any stretch of the imagination. Right. Yeah. But that's not necessarily what people are looking for. They're looking for someone who seems authentic. And I think that's something that a lot of Republicans miss when trying to tackle this problem.
How much, a couple things, because you worked with the National College Republicans on focus groups on a poll a couple years ago. That was great. And, you know, interestingly, there were a ton of negative things said about the Republicans as a kind of general brand. And yet, I remember in that poll, it was also when they were asked, who are like interesting Republicans? There was a long list, many of whom are running for president now. And on the Democratic side, besides Hillary Clinton, who, you know, is ancient, you know, in political terms, there was nobody.
Right.
What explains that? I mean, the Republicans are younger, but they're less hip.
So technically, I think the average age, not only of Republicans running for president, but of Republicans in Congress, I think is actually significantly lower than the Democrats. But again, age is sort of nothing but a number, right? If you can be 22, but in the navy blazer with the gold buttons and the bow tie and have a very I'm 60 years old mentality. Right. So, and I worry that Republicans need to demonstrate that they not just through image, not just through what you dress or what you like, but that you actually get that not everybody's ultimate dream in life is to have the mom and the dad and the white picket fence and the 2.5 kids and the dog, and you work at the same company real hard for 30 years. And, you know, people have very different visions for how they want to live their lives. I think Republicans need to talk about not how we want to empower a particular type of way of living, but how we want to help people live the way of life that makes them the happiest.
Can the Republicans actually stay true to their kind of conservative sensibilities and be like, oh, no, you know what? Actually, gay marriage is fine. The government should treat everybody equally. I mean, it just seems to me you're asking the Republicans to fundamentally change everything that they stand for.
I try in the selfie vote to actually find areas more so, I think, on the fiscal and economic issues than perhaps on the social issues, but to find areas where they don't have to change what they believe. They just have to explain why their principles apply to 21st century problems and the 21st century way of life. I think, you know, sort of transparently changing your views on things and suddenly, like Hillary Clinton, saying that you've always been this advocate for LGBT rights when really, as of 5 minutes ago, you weren't. I think that's transparent. I think young voters would see through that if all of a sudden every Republican woke up tomorrow and said, you know what, I've changed my mind on gay marriage. I think what you did see after the Supreme Court ruling, though, was this really broad spectrum of responses from Republican candidates. You saw some that said, let's get rid of the Supreme Court or let's not enforce this. But you had others that said, look, I believe marriage is between a man and a woman. The Supreme Court has said what they said. Let's all be tolerant and love one another and protect religious freedom and move on from here. And I thought that was sort of a best case scenario. Mm-hmm. You know, I, as much as I'm a supporter of marriage equality, I get where these folks are at.
All right, well, we will leave it there. We've been talking with Kristen Soltis Anderson, and the book is The Selfie Vote, Where Millennials Are Leading America and How Republicans Can Keep Up. Kristen, thanks for
having me.
For Reason TV, I'm Nick Gillespie.